From WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. As we sit here at the cusp of the year, we're reflecting on where we are and where we're headed as individuals, as a society, and as a planet. We start with the big picture, by which I mean really big picture, our place in the cosmos, our ever-changing understanding of how the universe works and, for that matter, what it's made of. Marsha Bartuszak is a professor of science writing at MIT and author of Dispatches from Planet 3. It's a collection of essays about recent advances in astrophysics and cosmology. Marsha, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Heather. Nice to be with you.
The first essay in the book is all about our cosmic address, and I love this. You talk about how our address is getting longer. You know, we're all pretty familiar with the idea that we're the third rock from the sun now. But of course, that was a few hundred years in the making of debate about whether or not we were at the center of the universe or actually the third rock from the sun. And it was interesting to realize that scientists have moved way past that. Can you just give us what our full address would be right now, and then we can break that down?
Yes. Starting in the 20th century, in fact, less than a century ago, we had a very small concept of the universe, that it was just the Milky Way, this island of stars suspended in a void of unknown depth. But the 20th century has shown that our address has really expanded. I like to say that we are planet number 3 in the solar system, on the Orion spur of the Sagittarius spiral arm of the Milky Way galaxy, in a local cluster, the Virgo supercluster, the universe, and even the multiverse. I can't begin to tell you what the zip code is.
Well, we'll get to the multiverse later, but there was a whole bunch of other stuff in there. The Orion spur on the Sagittarius spiral. Tell us a little bit more about what we're learning a little bit closer to home, kind of, you know, within our galaxy, at least.
We always sort of knew that the Milky Way was this spiraling nebulae of stars, a disk of stars. But just recently, we've come to verify that the Milky Way is actually a barred spiral. It's not a spherical cluster in the center. It's actually a bar-like structure with a spiral arm coming out from each end, spiraling around. And where the solar system is located off to the side, about 30,000 light years from the center, in a relatively clearer area of the galaxy known as the Orion Spur. We're not actually in one of the spiral arms. We're sort of off to the side.
And one of the really interesting things that you point out is that our human inclination seems to be to always picture ourselves at the center. And every time we've made a scientific advancement in figuring out where we actually are in the solar system, in the galaxy, it pushes us away from that. As you were just saying, we're not even on the spiral arm. We're on a little offshoot from that. We're off at the side, and it seems to be hard for us humans to grasp that we might not actually be the center of the universe.
That is true, because if you go out to a field of, you know, a dark sky above with all of the stars around you, you feel there's the illusion that you are at the center of the universe. But this is what 20th century and into the 21st century astronomy has taught us, is no, we're just a very small part of it. First, Copernicus kicked us out of the center of the universe by saying that the Earth revolved around the sun. Then we discovered that we were part of this larger collection known as the Milky Way. Then Harlow Shapley in the 1910s proved that we weren't even in the center of the Milky Way. We were off in the suburbs. We weren't even in the center of the Milky Way. And then, of course, Edwin Hubble, a short time later, proved that the Milky Way was not alone, that we were just one of hundreds of billions of other galaxies throughout a vast universe stretching for billions of light years.
And then, of course, that our universe may not even be the only universe, that there may be multiple universes.
Multiple universes. Of course, there's no observational evidence whatsoever, but those physicists who are looking into cosmology and trying to unite the forces of nature are seeing that the possibility is there. They are speculating that in other dimensions surrounding us, there are other parallel universes. Perhaps it's even thought that with the death of each star that turns into a black hole, all that matter that gets sucked into the black hole punches through and creates a new Big Bang, a whole new universe in another dimension beside us. So that with each death of a star, we may generate a new universe. Of course, this is all speculation. It's a lots of fun. And astronomers and theorists are actually trying to come up with ideas to see if there's any way they could prove this with observational evidence.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Is there ever any way that we could answer this question, or is that the fundamental limit of science to nail down our address? The universe, comma, the multiverse, question mark?
Never say never. There may be one way. Is people may remember that in 2015, we detected for the very first time gravitational waves going through the universe. These are actual vibrations in space-time that are generated from very energetic events like black holes or neutron stars colliding into one another. And those gravity waves are relaying very different information about the universe than electromagnetic waves. They don't go through space. They are actual vibrations in space-time. If they can detect the gravitational waves from the Big Bang, which they hope to do in the decades to come, it's still a far, far thing in the future, those gravitational waves will provide information on the very moment of creation of the Big Bang. We cannot do that right now. But that information may offer clues as to how our universe came to be, its very origins. So we may have to wait a century or two, but we may get
like
that information in the end.
Marcia Bartusiak is a professor of science writing at MIT and author of Dispatches from Planet 3. Marcia, recently scientists announced that there are actually up to 4 detections of gravitational waves. Of course, this has been the expectation since that first confirmation of gravitational waves that we would just see more and more of them, and they would be opening up all of these areas of exploration like the Big Bang, but also the idea of maybe being able to help find dark matter. And you have this fabulous essay where you go back to the origins of the idea of dark matter. Could you just take us back to where this crazy idea came from?
It was generated in the 1930s when a Caltech professor named Fritz Zwicky, very smart guy, he is the first one to suggest that stars explode and that neutron stars exist. And he also had this, he was studying this cluster of galaxies, and he noticed that they were moving around too fast. The cluster should have fallen apart and all the galaxies flung away from one another. And he came to suggest that in order for this cluster to stay together, there needed to be a gravitational glue, extra matter that was invisible and hidden, and he called it dark matter. The idea sort of was out there for a few decades. No one thought much about it until a woman astronomer, Vera Rubin, gathered much more evidence in the 1970s and 1980s that indeed there was likely these halos of matter surrounding each galaxy. And they knew that it couldn't be ordinary matter, because we can account for all the ordinary matter that could possibly be generated from the Big Bang. It had to be something different. Right now, the most popular theory is that it's an unknown particle. Just as we once didn't know that the neutrino existed, there may be other particles like that that were generated in the Big Bang, and it has a gravitational effect, but it can go right through us as if it's a ghost. And so we cannot detect it with regular instruments. There are special instruments now around the world. There's a number of experiments underground to try to see if they can capture one of these elusive particles. So far, there has not been any evidence so far. This mystery continues. But all of the cosmological theories kind of require it. So they keep searching, they keep hoping.
Marcia, Dispatches from Planet 3 is a collection of essays that you wrote, not sequentially, just as various findings popped up in the news. You kind of dug into the history, the backstory behind those advances. Why do you think that historical perspective is so important?
I think people, when they hear these crazy ideas, like possibly other universes out there and the existence of black holes and neutron stars, they think sometimes that these ideas just crop out of the minds of theorists as speculation alone. But no, there is a deep foundation of basing it in the physics of what came before. And it goes one step at a time. And so I want to let people see the whole context of how an idea came about. I think of the discovery of the neutron star that sounded so bizarre at the time in 1967 when Jocelyn Bell, a graduate student at the time, discovered this new type of star that was found to be putting out radio pulses. They called them pulsars. And theorists went to the blackboard, and neutron stars were already suggested. They had already worked out the physics in the 1930s. And that allowed them to then right away put two and two together and see that this pulsar was actually a spinning neutron star. So things don't come out of the blue. They sometimes are thought about, put off to the side, and then new observational data will suddenly make it real.
It was really interesting. You write that, of course, you like to highlight the contributions of women to science, but these essays weren't written in order to do that. But as you put the whole collection together, it became clear to you that by digging into these backstories, the role of women in astrophysics came to the fore on its own. Was that a surprise to you?
It was a surprise when I put all the essays. I wrote the essays over a number of years, and it was when I was putting them together into this collection for the book that I suddenly realized, oh my gosh, there are all these women who were not in the spotlight. But when I went to get the backstory, there they were. They're not often in the textbooks, but a number of women made very crucial, outstanding discoveries in 20th century astronomy. I think of Cecilia Payne Kapochkin, who discovered that hydrogen was the main element in the universe, which had great repercussions down the line. Margaret Burbidge provided the observational evidence that most of the elements in our body, the iron in our blood, the calcium in our bones, these were produced in the cores of massive stars. Henrietta Leavitt in the 1910s was the woman who provided the cosmological tool that allowed Edwin Hubble to discover that there were other galaxies in the universe. He could not have done it without her insights. Jane Liu co-discovered the first solar system object beyond Neptune and Pluto, the first Kuiper belt object, the leftovers from the formation of our solar system. It's one of the reasons Pluto was demoted as a planet. They saw that Pluto is really just one of the larger members of this Kuiper belt. So she was a vital part of that discovery. Beatrice Tinsley, I like to think of her as the Darwin of astronomy. She convinced astronomers that galaxies over the eons evolve and change. So these women made really important contributions, and I really feel proud of bringing them into the spotlight.
Well, Marcia, especially given that, as you say, no discovery comes as a complete surprise. It's built on something beforehand. I wonder what areas of research you're going to be looking at particularly closely in the coming year, or where we might expect to see some major advancements?
Well, a lot involving underground astronomy. They want to put these detectors underground so that there's no disturbances from the earthly environment or cosmic rays that might interfere with the detectors. So they put them underground. But particles like the dark matter, like neutrinos, this is providing a really new, rich window on the universe. So I'm really keeping my eye on that. Gravitational waves. We think quasars and pulsars and black holes are odd and strange. I'm wondering if gravitational wave astronomy, as it becomes a daily form of astronomy where they're gathering data every day, may find new celestial objects that are even stranger than we could even imagine.
Marcia Bartuszak is a professor of science writing at MIT and author of Dispatches from Planet 3. Marcia, thanks and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, Heather.
Up next, empathy is a popular idea these days, but it's not been around for as long as you might expect.
To my surprise, I realized that it was only around 1908 that a couple different psychologists suggested this new term, empathy. The word doesn't really enter the English dictionary until like 1944.
Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.